for members only. Golf Smarter number 466, published on December 9, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The all-new Ben Hogan Golf Brand Preview with CEO Terry Kaler.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Terry.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be back, Fred.
It's been such a long time since we've spoken. Oh, just moments. So now let's get into the Ben Hogan brand and what is going on. A little more history of how you got to this point. And then let's start talking about what you're allowed to reveal before the product hits the market.
Well, it's a wonderful story, and I've had people tell me, you know, this must be a dream come true to be the guy that's leading the team that's bringing the Ben Hogan Company back. But the reality is I never would allow myself to dream this big, and I don't hold my dreams back very much. But this one was outside the realm of what I would even let myself dream. Yeah. But the journey started as a child. I was raised with five lessons and power golf, and my dad had played golf with Mr. Hogan before the war and maintained a very, you know, casual relationship, and apparently communicated several times between then and the early 50s. But so I grew up thinking Mr. Hogan was like my long lost great uncle, but he was certainly my mentor, guru, de facto, in my golf. And if I heard it one time, I heard 1,000 times, you know, the secret's in the dirt. There's nothing wrong with your game. Another 5,000 practice balls won't fix. And that was the way I was raised to play golf, you know. And when I was having trouble with my swing, my dad would go get the book. And the book meant five lessons. Go get the book, go study the pictures, go read it again and again and again, and you'll figure it out. So that's the way I was raised. And as I got in the golf industry in 1980 and then and wandered around, and my dream job would have been marketing director for the Ben Hogan Company in 1994, I found myself there. The company had just moved from Fort Worth to Richmond, Virginia, and it was a shell of what Mr. Hogan had built. I just couldn't stand it. I left after a year. I left my dream job and went off on my own. So this all comes full circle. Last August, a year and a half ago, I reached out to Perry Ellis Company, which had bought the Ben Hogan brands from Callaway Golf after it had been dormant for 5 or 6 years. And we began conversations of how important the Ben Hogan brand was to the equipment sector and how we were the right people to bring it back. And we entered into a long-term worldwide license agreement to Ben Hogan that makes us the Ben Hogan Company. We packed our company up, moved it to Fort Worth, where the Ben Hogan Company is supposed to be, and have been building a team. We've got a really marvelous group of people that have come together. The product began development actually before we even signed the agreement, and we will be introducing the first new Ben Hogan golf clubs to be introduced to market in over 7 years, 8 years, on January 20th is the debut day. That's the coming out day for the new Ben Hogan golf clubs.
What can you tell me about them?
Well, I can tell you that all the Hogan purists out there will be immensely satisfied with the appearance. Mr. Hogan was noted as saying a golf club is like a piece of jewelry. He also was noted as saying it's functional art. And he also, one of my favorite quotes, Mr. Hogan was totally convinced on forging, and he said, the feel of a well-struck golf shot goes into your hands, up through your arms, right into your heart. One of my favorite quotes of Mr. Hogan's.
Yeah.
And that is what we have sought, to create a golf club that delivers that aesthetic beauty, very simple form follows function, performance art, if you will, excruciating standards of quality. Our director of operations, Steve Dreyer, ran the Ben Hogan factory from 1986 to the last Hogan club was made in the USA in 2006 or five. Steve's been running our factory at Score for some time and, you know, obviously continues to run it. We have Ben Hogan R&D people that have been working with us, that Ronnie McGraw, kind of a senior consultant. Ronnie's 78. but worked side by side with Mr. Hogan and Gene Shiely. He's the only man alive that actually had interactive dialogue with Mr. Hogan about golf club design and values. Tremendous resource for us to bring the old school artistry of golf club to the new school science of CAD and all the things that we have available now that Mr. Hogan would have been fascinated by. We have access to the most wonderful resource. We call it the vault, and it's the back room at Shady Oaks Country Club where Mr. Hogan's entire personal golf club collection is. And there are so many things in there that never made it to market, but it's just, I'm a kid in the candy store when I go back there to look at things he was willing to experiment with. And a lot of people don't realize what an innovator, but Ben Hogan Company pioneered lightweight steel shafts with the Apex. Ben Hogan Company pioneered cavity back forgings. Before that, game improvement forgings with the Hogan Radial. Ben Hogan, actually, a lot of people don't realize this, had the number one ball on tour for 8 years from 1972 to 1980. Won more money and more majors than any other ball in that period of time. There's just a whole lot of history. There are things in the vault that never went to market. There's a set of irons with all aluminum club heads, just to see if you could really get by with a club that light. There is a club dates back to the 60s that, for all intent and purposes, is a hybrid. There are counterbalanced putters. There are wedges with wavy grooves across the face. There's so much fun in there. Like I said, I'm a kid in the candy store, and I go hang out in the vault. I'm sorry, I think I rambled.
No, I'm blown away by this. I find it fascinating because today the competition, not on the course, but in the store that you're going to have to deal with. Yes, you have a phenomenal brand name, and to a lot of old-timers, it's going to mean a lot. But to a new generation of golfers, it may not. And what seems to be prevalent in golf sales is brand names that are being used on the tour, unfortunately. And marketing dollars. You know what I mean? Like, we've talked many times about the fact that there's a whole lot more money going into advertising than there is in R&D, and they want to make you think that it's all in R&D. But the restrictions are so great, they really can't do a lot.
Well, the rules on what a golf club can and can't do, you know, are very clear and they're written. But what we have approaches. Mr. Hogan stood for one principle above all others, and that was precision. He was very precise in the words that he chose when he spoke. He was very precise in the way he played the game. He was very precise in everything about a golf club. And he wrote a letter to golf pros in October of 1953 announcing that he was forming his golf company. And he said, these will be the finest clubs that can be made. And that's something we grasp onto. There are, when you make millions and millions of golf clubs, you have to take some leniency somewhere. We kind of our benchmark around here is Mr. Hogan had no tolerance for tolerances. And he's our guiding spirit. We all understand we don't work for Terry Kaler. We work for Ben Hogan and the legacy, and that's a huge yardstick for us to measure up to. So perfection is what we strive for. So our golf clubs are going to be all about being perfect. They're also going to be about accuracy. And making a golf club go longer is, you know, that's what everybody talks about. But what we want is when you pull your 6-iron out or your 8-iron out, you pull that club out, your 54-degree wedge, you have a yardage in mind. That club needs to go that far with the highest reliability possible. And that's what our irons and our wedges, the first products we'll introduce, are all about. Going the right distance and small dispersion patterns. And, you know, we're still crafting how we're going to tell the story in the marketplace, but really it's going to be all about the golf club. If you hit the Ben Hogan irons, you're going to buy the Ben Hogan irons because they are the most accurate, solid feeling, beautiful to look at golf clubs on the market today. And they are going to make you rethink what you think you know about iron design. Because what you think you know is basically what you've been reading from all the ads about thin faces and perimeter weighting and all that stuff. And we've got some interesting technologies that are going to challenge what you think you know. I can't go a lot deeper now, but we're within 60 days now. January 20th will be the unveiling day for the Ben Hogan Irons and Wedges to the entire world. The consumers, your listeners, will see them the exact same time that the trade, who will be gathered at the PGA show in Orlando, Florida, will all see them at 8 o'clock in the morning, January 20th.
Okay, so it's confidence. It's all about confidence. If you're confident in your clubs, if you just know that, okay, I got 135 yards to the pin, I need to hit it 138, I'm pulling out my 8 iron and my 7 iron as I walk up to the ball, and as I get close and I eye the weather, I see my lie, I see the angle that I have to attack and which way the green is going, okay, I'm going to pull out my 7 iron. You have to be completely confident that that's the right club. And you're saying that's what you're getting.
You're going to get that with the Ben Hogan iron, because your history with this golf club, you'll learn very quickly, is that it goes the distance you expected it to go. You know, I mean, if you lay the sod over on it, or if you turn the club over and hood it down, put a smother hook on it, if you lay the face wide open, I'm a club maker. I can't fix that. Mm-hmm. But if you make reasonably solid contact somewhere in the center half to two-thirds of the face, this golf club is going to give you better distance control and a tighter dispersion pattern from shot to shot to shot than anything we've tested in the market. And we've tested a lot of golf clubs, from blades to cavity backs to across the board.
So you alluded to in our last episode, and I want to pursue it, the design process and the being the fly on the wall for the design process and there with your design team. On what they want to do for the future of the game and for the future of, you know, new and different, and you want to make sure that the integrity of the Ben Hogan name is there and the quality. What goes on in that conversation? What can you share with us?
Well, our team that we've put together all shares a common goal. We all have exactly the same thing. How do we make a golf club better for the golfer it's targeted for? Not what is the other company doing? What kind of plastic are they putting in the back of their face? What kind of slots are they putting in the face? Why don't we have a square driver? They all have one. We are not driven by what other companies are doing. Actually, we may be driven by what they're not doing. Yeah. And what our focus always is, Ben Hogan Company is going after one small measured piece of the irons business and the wedge business and the fairway wood business and drivers when we get into these things. And we identify things that are missing. Not what others are doing, but what they're not doing. What are they not delivering for golfers that golfers might want? Not all golfers. You can't make any club that's right for everybody. Hmm. I mean, for example, one of the things that really amazes me is golfers say, well, I can't play a blade. I'm not good enough. But then they all play the wedges that are the number one wedge on tour. Well, if you're not good enough to play a blade iron, why would you pick the wedge that the best players in the world play? I mean, that to me is a disconnect. I don't think golfers think of it that way. And this word blade and this word game improvement, this word cavity back, perimeter weighting, these phrases are tossed around, and I don't think anybody really stops to say, but do I really know what that means? You know, let's take, for example, spin. I'm getting off on, but just to use this as an example, last year, Golf Digest Hot List, the score was honored for the third straight time. Actually, Score Wedges were the only club ever to win Hot List 3 years in a row without making a change in the product, in any category.
That's interesting.
That set aside, 9 of the 11 wedges honored in Hot List had a story about grooves and the face treatment. Well, how can 9 of them have the best grooves and face treatment? I mean, there's the best, and there's not the best, right? In our own testing on grooves, here's what we've learned. Spinning is a learned skill, not a built-in attribute. We took 4 different groove configurations that were all conforming, and we went out and took a group of 10 golfers of all handicaps to see which of these grooves worked best. First of all, we found that with any given golfer, even in a low handicap, hitting 10 balls in a row off of, quote, the same kind of lie, spin can vary 15 to 25%, and even as much as 40 to 60% for mid to high handicap golfer. Hitting the same ball with the same club 10 shots in a row. The quality of contact is that important. What we also found is, for this golfer, groove number 1 spun the ball overall a little better. For that golfer, groove number 2 did. For this golfer and that golfer and that golfer, it was groove number 3. For these 2 golfers, it was groove number 4. So what we came to the conclusion is, your golf club needs grooves on the face. as long as it has some, you're okay. Because spinning the ball is a learned skill. If you don't like the way you spin the ball, go to your PGA professional and tell him to show you how to spin the golf ball. It is a learned skill, not a built-in attribute.
Right. You've got to understand the swing path and what you're doing to make the ball back up or even stop once it hits. So many people I play with, when they're around the green, they're chipping up. They do not understand. It's clear to me, and it's taken me a long time to figure it out, but it's clear to me that they don't understand what the ball's going to do based on, they know what they wanted to do, but based on how they're swinging their club, they don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, spin is a learned skill. How to spin the golf ball, it's a learned skill, just like how to flight the ball down, how to hit cuts, how to hit draws. These are learned skills. I'm a golf club guy. I'm first to admit there's a limit to what we as a club company can give you. What the Ben Hogan Company is going to give you is the most precise adherence to spec in the industry, a set of golf clubs that is exactly suited to your strength profile, your launch angle profile, your shot dispersion profile, and a set of clubs that looks great to you, feels great to you, exudes confidence. And this set of golf clubs is not right for every golfer, but it is right for more golfers than might think so. And there's a lot of Ben Hogan legacy in it. There's a lot of score in it. There's a lot of new engineering in it from our team. It's a golf club that's going to redefine what we expect out of our irons and our wedges.
Are you in conversation with the USGA about any upcoming rule changes or design changes that are required? Or is that kind of thing that when you make your announcement at the PGA merchandise show in January, that they're going to make an announcement that same week going, oh, by the way, you're not allowed to do this to clubs?
No, we're not answering questions. Simply, no, we're not in conversation with the USGA about anything they're going to change. The rules of defining equipment are pretty clear. And, you know, working with irons and wedges, you know, they're not as broad as what you can and can't do, say, as in woods and things where you have the coefficient of restitution and the CT and MOI and all that stuff. So, the thing I'm always fascinated with is if you look at an iron shot, you're in the middle of the fairway, got a nice lie, 145 yards. Your goal is exactly what Mr. Hogan's goal was 65 years ago. And that is to hit it on a given trajectory, a given distance, with a given path to end up in a given spot. The objective of what we're trying to do is exactly what it was. Now, let's compare that when you sit in front of your computer versus somebody who sat in front of a typewriter 60 years ago. The objective is entirely different, so therefore the equipment can be entirely different. And I think that's a real interesting thing we keep in mind in golf club design is what I'm trying to give you is a tool that you can make the golf club do what you want it to do. Mm-hmm. No more, no less. Mm. And we have created a set of tools that does that better than anything else we've tested.
Right, right.
Responsive to what you know how to do.
So you're saying that the USGA's rules are not really focused on irons, that they're more about the big boy clubs?
No, I mean, they've got rules on everything.
You're
governed on design, putters, wedges, grooves, you know, everything. I'm just saying the rules define a relatively simple device for striking a golf ball.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, they have, you know, I mean, the rules on equipment, to me, are not restricted from a manufacturer standpoint. I'm not looking for them to relax the rules to give me any room to do anything. I think I can do a whole lot of things within the rules to build a better golf club. I think we've done it. I know we've done it. I don't worry about them.
Screw the rules. We're going to make our own rules.
No, I mean, hey, we play within the rules, but within the rules, we do a lot of things nobody's doing in golf equipment.
Well, then how
give you a better golf club?
But if the rules are there and they're very clearly defined, how is it that companies are able to come up with the newest and greatest every 6 months? I mean, you've got
how do they come
club
up
bank.
With the newest and greatest, or
yeah.
How do they come up with ads that say they've got the newest and greatest?
Is that what it, I mean? Like every 6 months, you've got the major manufacturers who are coming out with product that says, "Oh, this one you've got to replace last year's model." It's like, really? How much different can it be? Because you pushed the limit last time and no rule changes.
Put yourself in the position of the director of R&D for a major golf club company. The last thing you're willing to tell the CEO is, well, we really don't have anything new because what we created last year was the best that we could do and the rules haven't changed. So we really don't have anything else to do here until they change the rules.
Well, then he's meeting.
What's your job security if that's your answer? My thought is it's like grooves. The USGA changed the rules on grooves 5 years ago. If you're still doing something with your grooves, then you obviously didn't do all you could do when they changed. We did all we could do when they changed. I don't have anything else I can do until they change the rules again, and I don't need them to do that. But, you know, the club industry is driven to a great deal by a very short product life cycle and the implication that technology can improve your golf game every 4 months, to which I say, I don't really think so. But we haven't done all we can do, and that's where the Ben Hogan Company comes into the picture. We're doing things nobody's bothered to do. Mm-hmm. Because if you read the ads for irons, the only way to compete in irons is to make a 6-iron that goes further than the one you already have, or mm-hmm. further than the one the next guy makes. I don't think hitting your 6-iron 5 yards further is going to help your score.
Right. It's knowing how far you hit each club. It's not the distance, right?
I mean, I have a little presentation we did for the North Texas PGA on the changing toolbox, and we're really big about the changing toolbox. But I have a little presentation, and there's a slide in there, and these two golfers are talking, and it says, golfer number one, wow, my new 9-iron goes as far as I used to hit an 8. And his savvy buddy says, that's because your new 9-iron is your old 8.
Hmm. Right.
I mean, making a club go longer is a lot more about renaming the golf club than it is about technology.
And is that the biggest secret in golf? I mean, does the consumer have any concept of that?
I hope it's not a secret. You know, I don't think enough golfers do. I think they're wanting to believe that, wow, I'm hitting 6-iron further than I ever did. Well, that's because you're hitting 6-iron. Your new 6 is your old 5.
Oh.
And, you know, it's the same length as your old 5. It's the same loft as your own 5. And we took the shaft option out. We reshafted some old Hogan blades with the same shaft that we had in a modern thin-faced cavity-back golf club. And at 165 yards, there was less than 1.5 yards difference in carry distance between the two golf clubs.
That's remarkable.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Ben Hogan is going to be irons only. Are you doing hybrids and fairway drivers and drivers, or no?
We are introducing the brand with a set of irons, our first set of irons and wedges. And then we have a product plan. We hired a wonderful, wonderful engineer out of the golf industry. It's one of the bright young minds in our industry. And now he's blended together with Ronnie McGraw, who I mentioned, who is the old master craftsman for Hogan. So you have this 78-year-old guy and this 32-year-old guy that now get to collaborate on what golf clubs really can be expected to do. It's great. It's great to watch the dynamic. But we'll be moving into hybrids and fairways and second set of irons, drivers, maybe putters. And, you know, it'll take us 2 or 3 years to get to be a full-line company again. It takes a while. I mean, every product we develop will not go in the market until it does everything we want it to do for the golfer we want it to do that for.
So I guess that with that director of R&D, when he comes in to the CEO, before he does that, he has to stop by the director of advertising and marketing and say, I've gotten nothing new. What kind of spin can we put on it? Is that where that money's going to go? But you guys don't do that.
No, we don't do it that way. We start everything. I'm very engaged in the product development process. And we don't have departments that have to go. I mean, we have a team of 6 people that run this company. And I'm kind of the listener and the question asker. And our director of partner development, our director of marketing, our director of engineering, our director of finance, we all sit around and talk about what we need to do. Where's the opportunity? What are golfers after? And how do we get there? How do we put a plan together to get there? And marketing doesn't go in and say, I got to have a new product. And engineering doesn't come in. And I mean, we want engineering to find ways to build a better golf club for a targeted group of golfers, whether it's an iron or a fairway wood or a hybrid or a putter. You know, hey, we have a group of golfers here that we know are looking for this. Let's go get that for them. Because all golfers aren't looking for the same thing.
No, no.
Not every golfer wants his irons to go longer. Some want to hit it higher. Some want to hit it lower. Some want a more distance control. Some want to try to figure out how to get it in the air and make it go further. You know, and what we have the luxury of doing is looking at a group of golfers. Is that a sizable enough group of golfers that we can devote resources to helping them play better,
right,
with whatever that means to that group of golfers? And then we go do it.
Well, according to our conversation with Dave Stockton, you should be able to learn, you should learn how to hit it higher and hit it lower. Those, to him, those, that's what the two shots, a high shot and a low shot. That's all there was to him in our conversation.
You have to. I don't disagree with that. I remember Alan Doyle. You remember Alan Doyle played Champions Tour for a while? I don't know if he still does. And he won a tournament. I wanted one of my favorite quotes from, you know, Alan Doyle. But he just nailed greens in regulation for the week. And they were asking him, the interviewer was asking him, so what's your secret to good iron play? And he says, you hit your wedges and short irons low and everything else high.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Okay, how simple is that?
So, with
but
the,
in our research,
yeah,
80% plus of golfers hit their short irons and wedges too high by their own definition.
I have no doubt.
And yet we're putting a golf club in their hands that is designed to make it go higher still.
Right.
Well, if they already don't like how high it goes, why are you giving them a club that goes even higher? That doesn't make any sense.
So now with what's been happening in the marketplace, very few players are using 2 irons, 3 irons, 4 irons, and even some are replacing their 5 irons with hybrids. Where is the Ben Hogan line of club start? What's the selection?
Well, you know, we're not going to have hybrids to start. We're still in development. We don't have them quite where we want them yet, but we expect them by late spring. So this first set of irons can go all the way down to, you know, 20-degree loft, you know, whether you call that a 2 or 3 or 4, you know, and that's debatable. In one of the new sets of irons, the 4 iron is 20 degrees. In my old set of Reed Lockhart irons, my 1 iron is 19. So, you know, go figure. But so numbers on the golf clubs, you know, don't mean a whole lot. You got to know what, you know, we've talked about that with score. You got to know the loss of your golf club to know what you're really dealing with there. So we'll offer a full set of irons. You can build them out as low in the lofts as you want, as high in the lofts as you want. You know, the hybrid is really a personal preference. Right now, if we're fitting you for a set of Ben Hogan irons and you carry hybrids, whatever brand they might be, and you play them all the way out to 4 or 5 iron, well, we're going to build you a set of irons starting out after that. If you don't play a hybrid at all and you're a guy that they still carry the 1 iron, we'll build you a set starting at that. So we're all about helping you as a golfer get the toolbox together that will help you dissect the golf course, you know, on the terms you play it with. And if you hit a 6 iron 165, you have a different set of needs than the guy that hits 135. But we're building a set of irons that we can get that dialed in for you so your gapping is proper and your trajectories are right and this kind of thing.
Tell me about the new Ben Hogan brand website, what functionality is there, and how we find it.
Well, the beginning website has just gone up. There's a limited amount of information. We're not revealing any secrets about the golf clubs yet, but there's a countdown. There's a place to sign up to be the first on your block to know about them. But the site does tell you a little bit about Mr. Hogan and the legacy and the history, and there's a really wonderful, cool new video that we just produced that's on it, and it is live as of the publishing of this podcast, and we invite people to go to benhogangolf.com. and begin to learn about this wonderful reentry into the market of one of the greatest brands in golf history. And everything we're doing is living up to Mr. Hogan's values and ideals, we believe. And we're very close to the Hogan family and the Shady Oaks family where Mr. Hogan hung out. And everybody's so excited about what we're doing. BenHoganGolf.com. And sign up to follow the story, and over the next 2 months, you'll be getting all of the updates as they become available.
Mm. And will the functionality be such as you had with Score Fit?
We will have any fitting on the website at launch. There's not any up now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure not until after the clubs are released.
As we introduce the product, you know, we have a score fit is and was a wonderful tool, and we have a lot more in store. I'll leave it as a secret for that for your listeners to go sign up to where they can have a first look at it on January 20th.
Okay, so here's something I'm going to propose to you, Mr. Kaler. I looking at my upcoming schedule of podcast publication dates. We have episode number 472 is going to be published on January 20th. What I would like to request from you is that you and I do an interview before that date, so you that I can release this the day that you make the public announcement. Would that be possible, or are you going to be just too crazy busy to talk to me just before then so we can coincide with your announcement?
No, let's do that. That would be great. Love to do that.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, that's the tease of all teases. So you've got like 8 episodes or something. 6 episodes of tease there to come back. But hopefully you'll stick with us because we've got more coming up. We've got Maddie B Awards for 2004. We've got a lot coming up on the Golf Smarter podcast. So hopefully you'll stick around. Well, Terry, this is going to be one of those memorable holiday seasons for you to look back on as you start a whole new chapter of your life. This is really exciting. Congratulations.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to having the Golf Smarter listeners come to BenHoganGolf.com, and can't wait.
So is it officially winter at your course yet? You know, I've talked numerous times about California's drought and the impact on the state's courses that provide year-round golf in most areas of California. Well, I'm happy to announce that here in Northern California, we experienced a week's worth of very strong storms and are expected to get slam again in the next few days. Does it help? Well, experts are saying that the drought is not over, and the ground is so dry that all the water we've had is just getting absorbed into the ground. We still need a lot of water. But even with normal or even above normal rainfall, the experts are saying it's still going to take a couple of years before this drought is officially over. Most importantly, we need a lot of snow. It's not just the rain. We need snow and snowpack in the Sierra Mountains because it's that runoff that feeds the reservoirs and the extremely fertile agricultural industry. No matter what you hear about the leisure lifestyle and the high-profile industries of Hollywood, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Silicon Valley, California's main source of revenue is still agriculture. It's not what you think of first off, but that's what we are. So I will go out and slosh around with my buddies as much as we can on the courses. And, you know, because there's rarely any flat ground, when you go into those low grounds, you're walking in mud. But frankly, I'm not going to be disappointed if I don't get to play much this winter because of wet weather. I'm the first to admit that I'm a weather wimp and won't play in the rain or the cold. But I'm a native Californian, and that's just what we do. So from the round this weekend, I posted a photo on our Facebook page, the Golf Smarter Facebook page, of a very happy swan swimming around one of the lakes and the ponds at Rooster Run Golf from my round this weekend. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for the Golf Smarter podcast or for me, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.